The holidays are here, and for many of us, that means food and fun with family and friends and decorations to celebrate the season. But even well-behaved cats and dogs can be tempted by the savory smells of turkey and gravy or the sparkly shimmer of tinsel and ornaments, which can be bad news for Fluffy and Fido. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to talk about how to keep our furry friends safe and healthy this time of year are MedVet Cincinnati emergency veterinarian, Dr. Angie Callahan. Welcome back, Dr. Callahan.
Thanks for having me, Lucy.
Veterinarian and certified cat behavior consultant, Dr. Denise Johnson. Thanks for being here, Dr. Johnson.
Happy to be back.
And certified professional dog trainer and owner of Paws, Look, Listen, Nick Hoff. Welcome back, Nick.
Thank you so much.
They're here to answer your questions, so give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. And a quick reminder, advice from our guests is general in nature and should not substitute for a visit to your own veterinarian. Dr. Johnson, with Thanksgiving on Thursday, let's talk first about the holiday foods that we definitely should not feed our pets. What are the key foods to avoid?
Honestly, I think it's important to really delineate that no table scraps are really encouraged, because especially if there are children in the family or if there are some cognitive concerns with our aged guests, trying to differentiate between what is and isn't good table food can be really challenging. We especially want to be mindful that items that are high in fat may be damaging for inflammatory reasons. We need to be worried about foreign material. So things like bones that we are very smart about eating around, a very enthusiastic counter surfer might hork down faster than they can really think about. And I'm sure being a med vet in a med vet position, she has a lot to say about the exciting visit she's seen post-holiday. But my personal stance is abstinence. Give them their own special Thanksgiving treat. There are so many different canned food options that have turkey in them for festivity's sake that you can just really avoid a lot of trouble by allowing table scraps to be in the mix.
What do you think, Dr. Callahan? Is that your rule of thumb too?
Exactly. I couldn't agree more. We just don't know who, you know, if Fluffy or Fido is prone to pancreatitis, and it would just be tragic to feed, you know, turkey or even just something that you would think is benign and then end up, you know, spending 6 hours in the emergency room for a dog or a cat that's vomiting and having diarrhea because you thought that a piece of turkey would be a good idea.
Well, and I'm glad you mentioned turkey, because I know that, you know, Dr. Johnson, you said rule of thumb, no table scraps. Which sounds like a very smart rule of thumb, but I think one that a lot of people will not follow. So I read online that with turkey, the skin is bad. Of course, the bones are bad. But can the meat be bad too, Dr. Johnson, just the turkey meat?
It's going to depend a little bit on that individual pet and their tolerances. And that can be really hard to know until you're kind of in the thick of it. And I will say that generally speaking, veterinarians are not open on Thanksgiving. So if you were to have some consequences from that, you may be looking at an ER visit or an urgent care visit that is quite a bit more expensive than, again, if there's some very tasty canned food options that are turkey-based that are more permissible. I'd say most cats and dogs would probably get away with a little bit of plain breast meat that has not been imbued with garlic butter and exciting, tasty things. But if your Thanksgiving meal is, this is going to be really rude, but if your Thanksgiving turkey actually tastes good and has all that good fat and flavoring to it, the worse it probably is for your pet friend. So you would have to have a pretty boring, pretty terrible turkey dinner to be able to very comfortably and confidently share that with your pet.
Wow. That is a good rule of thumb. Like, mm-hmm. The better it tastes, the worse it is for your pet. Okay, I know I'm pushing this whole turkey thing, but Dr. Callahan, I know there are some people who like to cook like the giblets and give those maybe to a cat or dog. Is that a bad idea also?
I suppose if you, boiled that separately from the turkey and cut those up. Again, like Dr. Johnson said, maybe a little bit sprinkled on their canned food would probably be okay. So it's not a matter of if it's, you know, the giblets or the heart or even, you know, the other bits that come in the bag that we all forget about. But, you know, sprinkle with a little bit of the meat, you know, again, probably going to be okay. But why risk it when, like she said, there's tons of fun little canned food options out there that you can make them feel special about.
Yeah. Nick, do you have experience with this with your, I mean, your dogs are probably so well behaved, they never beg for anything, right?
Oh, they definitely still beg. but yeah, I'm in full agreement with our veterinarians that really, just to put it simply, it's not worth the risk. I'm actually going to be making a special trip to the pet store later today to find some good special goodies from the pet store for my dog and for my cats to enjoy this holiday. I don't know if it's still available, but in years past, they've specifically gotten a canned food, I think by the company Merrick, that actually had a flavor called Thanksgiving Dinner. Mm-hmm. And that was usually my go-to. But that's going to be my preference and my choice, is to feed some things that I can find from the pet store for my pets. And then at home, I'm going to be putting together some management separation so that I don't have to worry or fret about my pets getting into any of the food while I'm preparing it or while I'm distracted. So I'm going to be using baby gates and playpens and some supervision to help make sure that everyone is doing exactly what I'd like them to.
Now, baby gates and playpens, that sounds very effective for dogs, but you have cats too.
Mm-hmm.
What can you do separation management for cats, or is that just a losing battle?
You can. It definitely is a lot more challenging. Last year, I had to keep my dogs and my cats completely separate for about 3 months while I was doing some reintegration. And that was an interesting process of me learning, how do I keep cats out of spaces I don't want them in? And I found some special gates on Amazon that were a really good fit for that purpose, that are about 6 feet high with really narrow bars and really difficult for my cats to jump. I did have to supplement that with an additional small baby gate on top, and it was floor to ceiling coverage, but it worked completely to keep them separate. What's going to typically work better, though, is we're putting in place some management of using baby gates or playpens, but then we're providing our animals with an alternative activity that's going to be really enticing for them. So putting together a puzzle toy for my cats to keep them happy and occupied upstairs while I'm working on my festivities downstairs in the kitchen behind a baby gate is going to be a really good combination.
Okay. So it's a layered approach. It's a parfait of protection to keep those.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm always a big fan of having multiple things in place in order to help maximize success.
Yeah. Well, we are talking about pets for the full hour, and we're getting tips for keeping our furry friends safe and healthy during the holidays. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or by emailing talk@wbxu.org. So, Dr. Callahan, before we leave this topic of table scraps completely, we did get a question from our colleague, Jennifer Merritt. She said, I know what I can't feed my dog from the table, and she loves this dog. Onions, raisins, grapes, and all that stuff, but I want to give him a treat from the Thanksgiving table if I want to do that. Is there a better for him choice, like sweet potatoes or pumpkin pie? Is that a really bad idea?
I would probably stay away from the pumpkin pie, excuse me, simply because there's the sweetened condensed milk and all the other ingredients that go into that. So sweet potatoes are fine, but if you're making a sweet potato casserole that it has brown sugar and marshmallows and all the other things that we know typically go into that type of dish, then maybe make him something on the side that is just a baked sweet potato that doesn't have all the other stuff on it. Because the sweet potato in and of itself is not bad. It's all the other stuff that make it super tasty for us that could potentially be bad.
The butter and the salt.
Exactly.
And all that stuff.
Same thing with your green bean casserole. Green beans in and of themselves are great for dogs, but it's all the other stuff that goes on it that could potentially cause a problem.
Yeah. Did you want to add to that, Nick?
Yeah. So if you are specifically wanting to share something with your dog from the table, my advice that is counter to what I would normally suggest is bring a special treat to the dinner table with you for your dog that you'll be sharing with them later on during the meal so that they are getting included. They are getting that special goodie from the table. Now, normally, that would not be my recommendation. And in fact, if you are typically wanting to maybe share some appropriate food with your dog during other times of the year, I don't like to ever give it from the table, but instead take it from the table, put it in my kitchen for a little bit so that it's removed from the mealtime, and then I'll maybe give it to my dog a little bit later, but that's only if it's an approved item from our veterinarian.
Okay. Dr. Johnson, we've been talking a lot about dogs. I want to talk a little bit about cats, too. Is there anything that's really bad for dogs, excuse me, in terms of a holiday meal that's not as bad for cats or vice versa? Or is your rule of thumb these pets shouldn't get dogs, cats, gerbils, guinea pigs, none of them should get anything from the Thanksgiving table?
I definitely wouldn't be giving your guinea pig any turkey. Generally, I consider cats and dogs fairly equivalent in terms of we want to avoid table scraps and things. I would just throw out there for a fun fact that the artificial sweetener xylitol, while that's a very, very significant concern in canine medicine, for whatever reason, cats don't seem to mind that so much. But I wouldn't give it to them on purpose. And I don't know that it's necessarily featured heavily in our Thanksgiving meal. But in terms of, excuse me, in terms of things that we might get away with giving to a cat that we would really recommend against for a dog, I will probably give my cat a pinch of turkey. But again, under the advisement that I am a veterinarian and I have a personal pharmacy for him at home, and anybody else would be, again, tempting fate visiting MedVet for a potential GI upset. But a little shred of the most boring middle of the meat, so there's no fun penetrating garlic butter or anything like that, that would be permissible, but don't tell your vet that I told you that was okay.
Fair enough. It's just between the three of us, so don't worry. Again, we're talking about pets for this hour. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk@wvxu.org. Okay, aside from dinner and table feeding concerns, there's the whole question of what if a relative says, oh, can I bring my beloved dog to your house? What should that answer be? I'm going to start with you, Dr. Callahan, because what if you have a dog or a cat or a baby or a toddler? What are some of the considerations that should go into that decision?
Absolutely. I think we need to think long and hard about that decision, because my dog, my cats, my kids may not know your dog's behavior, and, you know, your dog may become stressed by my kids, my cat, my dog. And so I think I'll lean on Nick a little bit here as far as those avoidance techniques and setting up safe spaces for everybody in the family, because even though your dog is the best dog ever, when you're in a high stress situation with loud toddlers, screaming babies, cats that smell funny and dogs that smell funny, and, you know, there's the typical family loudness too, and things can escalate very quickly. So just making sure that everybody feels comfortable with the environment that's set up. And also you have to understand that if your dog gets stressed, you know, Aunt Mary might tell you to put them away, and you have to respect that.
Nick, talk to us about, have you run into that? How do you separate if you've got a friend or family member, you have dogs, you have cats, but they say, oh, I can't leave my baby at home for reasons X, Y, and Z. How do you separate them? What's your strategy there?
Yeah. So a lot of my clients do end up traveling with their pets to visit family. And so this is a common thing that I help them navigate. I will say that my general first recommendation is if we can avoid bringing our pets to other family members' houses, that's generally going to be a great idea, because I know I personally am going to really struggle to enjoy myself and enjoy the experience if I'm going to have my pet with me, because I'm going to want to make sure that they are doing well, that they are well taken care of, and that's going to detract from my ability to just enjoy myself. Now, if we are bringing our pets, though, my personal thoughts would be that if we are going to have any potential interaction between different pets from different families, to even attempt that, we need to have everyone being very social, being very friendly, not really having any issues. If that's not the case, then we're very likely, or if we're wanting just to hedge our bets and be safe, it's probably going to be a really good idea to keep everyone more or less more separate. And that's where using baby gates, playpens can be very helpful if we happen to have those handy at our home or at the family member's home. Otherwise, what we're very likely going to want to be utilizing is going to be dog leashes in order to kind of help facilitate those separations. Depending on the dog and pet's history, we might also want to bring a muzzle and have done some muzzle training with our pet ahead of time so that we can feel more relaxed and more comfortable, because that can be a great way to help us to feel more at ease and more relaxed, even in these different situations with a lot of factors going on. Definitely giving lots of breaks, lots of opportunities for rest, for separation is going to be a really good idea. I personally would probably not have my pet out in these situations for literally more than 30 minutes at a time, and giving them plenty of breaks and opportunities to get away.
Okay. We do have a caller on the line. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Did you want to add something, Dr. Johnson?
Yeah, just to add real quick, I think it helps to be really blunt about what are our goals here? Why do we want our pet along? Is this a safety management because the pet can't be left at home? Is that going to be an issue if they then need to be confined during the meal? Are there just good social reasons why, oh, my pet loves to be at the family meal, and so we have a little bit of a behavior history of success in that environment, in which case we still want to talk about what our criteria might be for sending that pet home, or whether we can put into place a safe crate of downtime, rest time, again, making sure that that's a pet that could be safely confined, and really talking about in advance of, all right, when do we pull the trigger on you need to just go home, so that that's not something that we're trying to navigate in the moment in a potentially high stress, high stimulation environment.
That sounds smart. Communication is a good thing. For sure. Okay, we do have a caller on the line. Hi, Judy. Thanks so much for your call. What is your question?
I have a 5-year-old golden doodle. She was a COVID baby, and for the first 2 years that we had her, she pretty much did not see many people. And now, whenever we have company, I mean, it could be anybody who walks through the door, she barks and does not stop barking until that person leaves. And, I mean, this is very annoying, especially when we're sitting down and eating dinner or whatever. And she has extreme separation anxiety. We've been able to kind of handle that more than we have the barking. And we don't quite know what to do about the barking. It's just, it's so annoying, you can't imagine.
I bet I could imagine. That sounds annoying. And when a dog wants to bark, they can make a lot of noise. Nick, I'm going to turn to you for this. What kind of advice do you have for Judy?
Sure. So first and foremost, it's probably going to be a good idea, both because of the guest manners when you have people over, as well as the separation anxiety that you mentioned, if you haven't already had some conversation with your veterinarian about these anxious behaviors, as well as possible medication or supplements that may be able to help with that, that would definitely be a really good starting point. Otherwise, working with a trainer at this point would very likely be a good idea. They can help you navigate some of these different situations, because what we want to come up with are both management solutions that can help us to manage this issue while we're addressing it. So maybe we are wanting to work on normalizing some independence training and some separation from our dog, and see if we can get our dog, even when we don't have guests over, to be okay being one room away from us or two rooms away from us. I'll usually start doing this with a baby gate for separation, because it still allows a lot of awareness, sight, line of sight, visual, hearing, everything. But then working up to having us be out of sight or even closing a door, but making sure that our dog is comfortable and happy throughout that process. That can be a way so that you have an option when you do have guests over, that you've normalized your dog being put away separately and they can be more okay with that. again, these are things that will definitely be helped by having working with both a trainer as well as your veterinarian for addressing any of those underlying anxiety-based issues. But trainers are going to be able to work on normalizing all of the different elements that go into having a guest over, and we can help to desensitize and train our dog to be more okay with this. So I do a lot of training where I work with going up to my client's front door and just practice lightly knocking on the door or unlocking the door, opening the door and speaking softly to someone on the other side who's not actually there. That's always an interesting part of the exercise. When I open the door, the dog's doing really well, and I say, "Hey, how are you?" And the dog goes, "Wait, there's actually someone here." And that's when they start to get a little more anxious. And so we want to practice with our dogs at normalizing all of these elements.
Interesting. And when you talk about talking with a vet, that for some dogs or I guess cats who have these very serious anxiety problems, some medication before a visitor comes over might be part of the answer, it sounds like.
Absolutely. There can be some different options, which again, your vet's going to be able to best help you with. There are some pets who are going to just struggle with the anxiety under certain situations, and having some medication that you can use a little bit ahead of time can be really helpful. And then there are other dogs or pets who may benefit from some ongoing assistance that because of just general life on a day-to-day basis being either unpredictable or difficult to manage around. And so those are pets that may benefit from some more regular help. And that can take some time for it to build up in the system. But once it's helping, it's always there and helping.
Okay. Well, Judy, I sure hope that helps. Thank you so much for listening and for calling. We're going to continue our pet show after a short break. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're talking about pets for the full hour with a panel of experts to answer your questions. My guests are MedVet Cincinnati emergency veterinarian Dr. Angie Callahan, veterinarian and certified cat behavior consultant Dr. Denise Johnson, and certified professional dog trainer and owner of Paws, Look, Listen, Nick Hoff. Do you have questions for them or comments about how you keep your pets safe and healthy during the holidays? Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk at wvxu.org. Dr. Johnson, let me ask you this. How can we prepare our homes for guests who might be allergic to our cat or dog? I mean, sometimes you're going to invite people into your home. You know they have an allergy. Is there something that you can do to try to be a little bit more thoughtful? I know my cats will immediately be drawn to whoever has the worst allergy, but in terms of getting the environment prepared, what's the best thing to do?
That does depend a little bit on the degree of their allergy, whether they just need to have that pet kind of separated from contacting them directly, or whether you need to do some pretty aggressive cleaning measures. If you know that they are quite sensitive, then I think setting up a sanctuary space for your pet a few days in advance so that they can kind of get used to being confined in that area. If they're anxious about being separated in that area, then maybe even look at some situational anti-anxiety medication to make that all the more pleasant of a private suite, and looking at some fairly aggressive vacuuming measures. There are some different products available that will actually break down the protein that humans tend to be allergic or react to. There are some products that you can even apply directly to your cat's coat if the individual family member is fairly mildly allergic, then that may be an option for giving them some relief, but still allowing your pet free run of the home. If they're anything like my family members who have cat allergies, they still absolutely love cats and want them up in their business anyway. So that could be a really good compromise. But really making sure that we're minding their health and safety and just being really frank with them about, all right, these are the safe rooms that I have confined my cat away from, and you can hang out here. Do not open that bedroom, or do not trust to that couch that has been just marinated in cat dander 24/7 for the last 5 years. So just kind of setting expectations on where is and isn't kind of presumed safe, and letting them make that decision on how much exposure they trust.
Yeah, Dr. Callahan, we've talked about, in a couple different contexts, anxiety medication for our pets. And before the show started, you mentioned that if people think they're going to need that, they need to get on that. Can you talk a little bit about what people should be thinking about to really prepare if they think they need something like that on hand, either for travel or gatherings or whatever?
Yeah, sure. I think that if you feel that you may need an actual prescribed medication, you should be calling your veterinarian immediately. Don't wait till tomorrow. I mean, honestly, should have been yesterday or even the week before, because as veterinarians, you know, a lot of our family veterinarians are very busy. And if you're, you know, late on your annual physical exam, that might require a physical exam before getting a prescribed medication. So if you need something, like I said, that is dispensed through a veterinarian, you need to call them very, very soon, because you may not be able to get those prescribed medications that are situational. There are some over-the-counter nutraceutical-type products that you can buy over-the-counter that have, like, the tryptophan, which is what's in turkey, and some other types of all-natural products that may be of assistance that can kind of help calm your pet, but maybe not to the degree that some of those prescribed medications can help. So,
Nick, what have you found? I'm sorry. Go ahead, Dr. Johnson.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm just, you know, remotely here inserting my nose into everybody's questions. I would just add another reason why it's really important to act sooner rather than later on that is that we generally want to perform at least one test dose of a psychopharmaceutical before we are relying on it. Mm-hmm. There can be paradoxical reactions where instead of getting nice, quiet, sleepy, we actually get bouncier. Exactly. There are children who you give a Benadryl to hoping that they're going to calm down, and instead they are now ping-ponging against the walls. So mm-hmm. we really want to make sure that we know what medication works well for that pet and have the opportunity to potentially do some dose adjustments before we're in the thick of it. You do not want to find out that your golden doodle becomes hyperactive on trazodone in the middle of Thanksgiving
exactly.
dinner. That
uh-huh.
is zero fun. So just making sure that we're mindful of those opportunities to test things out and kind of incorporate that into our timeline.
Also, too, giving those medications before the event happens can uh-huh. have the pet associate the feelings that they're feeling with the calm environment. So if you're giving an anxiolytic when you're in the middle of Times Square, all those feelings that you're feeling, you're going to associate with Times Square, and you may not get the desired result that you want. So I will tell clients to give this medication during, you know, movie time or when there's a calm situation so that they can associate that environment with the feeling that they're feeling from the medication as well. So you need time to do that.
Yeah. Nick, what are some over-the-counter nutraceuticals that you've had success with?
Yeah, the main one that I have had personal experience with is a product called Anxitane, which is A-N-X-I-T-A-N-E. And that is an L-theanine supplement. That L-theanine is from green tea, and that can help to have a calming impact. Last year, I'd actually gotten it for our St. Bernard to help with his on-leash reactivity and general excitability that we were working on. And I bought it at the time. I bought 4 boxes, expecting that to be about 4 months worth to try with our dog. And for our giant breed, that was about a 1 month supply. And so I went ahead and still tried it for the month. And after the month, I was like, this might be helping, but I don't know if it's helping at this price point. So we'll go ahead and take a break. I stopped giving it to him, and that is when I realized how much that had actually been helping over the past month. He had been really benefiting from it in a more subtle way that I hadn't realized, and it was really evident once I stopped. And so I started him back on that. But that's the one that I personally have had the most experience with. There's another product called Zilkine, which is a milk protein supplement. Both of those have some clinical studies that help to show their efficacy at helping to reduce stress and anxiety. But these are still good things to run by your veterinarian. Even if you're not going to be getting a prescription from them, I think it's a really good idea to still run all of that by them. And then I'm in agreement with everything else that was suggested. And you may not have enough time right now to get a prescription medication to get your vet, your pet seen by your vet right now before Thanksgiving, but you do have enough time before Christmas. So if you think that your pet could really benefit, make a note to plan that now and get them on the schedule before Christmas.
Yeah. Dr. Callahan, have you had experience with any of that over-the-counter stuff Nick talked about? And I guess, is all that safe for our pets to give them? And how much conversation should you have with a vet before you start something over-the-counter like that?
Yeah, sure. I think what Nick said is absolutely appropriate. Just running it past your veterinarian to make sure that with all the other comorbidities that your pet might have, you know, if your pet is diabetic or has thyroid conditions, you just want to make sure that that your veterinarian feels comfortable with that. But in general, you know, the Enzatine, even the Composure, which has been around on the market for a long time, you know, we have a lot of general experience with, and they are generally regarded as safe. But you just want to make sure that it's safe for your pet and everything that you know your pet has been through. So, I mean, even something as simple as melatonin is generally regarded as safe, but in certain conditions, it might not be safe to give that type of product that. May cause a problem for them. So.
Sure. It all depends on the pet.
Yep.
Yeah. Dr. Johnson, one of the things that I always worry about when I've got people coming over is one of my pets slipping outside during the holidays, an open door, so many people coming and going. How big a problem can that be this time of year when we've got so many different people coming in and out of our homes? And what kind of advice do you give to make sure that doesn't happen?
Oh, it can be tremendously challenging, especially with lots of packages being delivered or people coming in and out with boxes. And cats and small dogs are especially good at just sneaking right between the legs and out the door. One of the recommendations, if you are able to install one, that I really like is creating a little bit of an airlock right by your front door or whichever door you have most of your traffic coming through. They make a variety of different retractable baby gates that are really nice to just extend as a little bit of an extra barrier if you just need to answer the door and accept a package real quick, or if you have a family member who can pass things to you and then can sneak into that little airlock that you've created. So that just gives you that measure of safety so that there's not immediate access to that outside world.
Dr. Callahan, is that something you all run into at MedVet this time of year, pets that get outside who don't usually go outside or are outside unsupervised and then get hurt as a result?
Absolutely. We see a lot of, trauma cases where, you know, somebody opens the door unexpectedly and you know, the cat or the dog runs out and they end up in the street and end up with some minimal injuries all the way up to the ones that can be quite devastating. So I love the idea of having, you know, the airlock type of situation, or even like using the mudroom as an entry point. So, you know, even just lost pets are scary, right? So if your pet's not microchipped, you can put, like an air tag on them or some other type of locating device so that they can be found if they do happen to get outside. But even just as simple as if you know that family members are coming over or the Amazon guy is coming, put them in behind a closed door so that you can get those packages in a safe way.
Yeah. Nick, did you want to add to that?
Absolutely. So this is a common thing that I talk a lot with my clients about and a very common issue that I see as well. In general, when we are talking about preventing a problem behavior, especially concerning one, whether we're talking about escaping or aggression, for example, I'm a big fan of having multiple layers of separation. The airlock is a fantastic idea, and I often talk with my clients about that, especially clients with children. I find that to be really helpful if we can set that up. Otherwise, if we're not able to create some sort of airlock option near the front door or whatever door we're accessing, we can also set up some barriers to help keep everyone comfortable in other ways. So I will usually try to aim for at least two layers of separation. So I might put my dog in their crate in the bedroom behind a closed door. So now I have my dog is in a crate behind a closed door, and we have the front door that is being opened. So now we would have to have multiple things go wrong in order for that access to happen. And so that can be very helpful. And not only can this be really good for our guests coming over for the holidays, I highly recommend this type of approach for any pet sitters who are taking care of our pets. It is unfortunately not that unusual every year for one of my clients to contact me because a pet of theirs got away from a pet sitter, and it can be for a very similar reason because they just slipped out because they weren't as familiar. So having those contingencies and those safeguards in place so that we can maximize success is always going to be a really, really smart idea. And if we can't do any of these things, let's put our dog's leash on. Let's put eyes on them so that we can at least supervise.
Okay. We'll be back to wrap up our pet show after a short break. If you have questions, now's the time to call 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're back with our pet show and a panel of experts to offer advice on keeping our pets safe and healthy during the holidays. My guests are MedVet Cincinnati emergency veterinarian Dr. Angie Callahan, veterinarian and certified cat behavior consultant Dr. Denise Johnson, and certified professional dog trainer and owner of Paws, Look, Listen, Nick Hoff. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk@wvxu.org. We do have a caller on the line. Hey, John, thanks for calling. What's your question or comment?
Hi, thank you very much for taking my call. I wonder, I have four kittens that we caught in our backyard. I'll take them in to get neutered. I was told they were 3 months old. They were returned the day after surgery. My wife has them in a screened-in room now. They've been in there for almost 2 weeks. I'm wondering if I'm doing more harm than good by should I release them now, or can they stay in the screened-in room until spring?
Gotcha. So you're planning to kind of release these back into to be neighborhood cats or community cats, and you're wondering if now's okay or if they need to stay warm over the winter. Okay. Well, thank you, John. I'm going to ask you about that, Dr. Johnson. You're our cat expert on the call. What do you think?
I think to some extent, it depends on the temperament of the individuals. It sounds like if we're 2 weeks out from their neuter, that we should, from a medical standpoint, be okay to be unsupervised. If they tolerate being confined and having that, you know, heat support and having their plane of nutrition more bolstered by being nice and indoor kept, then that's fantastic. If being in that environment is stressful to them, if we're seeing a lot of kind of crouched and hiding body language, if their appetite is reduced secondary to that, then they may be better introduced now versus delaying. It really is going to depend on that individual and how they're coping with that confinement. If they are at all social and have an opportunity to become more habituated to humans and have more affiliative contact with them, if we can convince them that humans are a good idea and be social, then I think a little bit of a desensitizing boot camp where we're showing them that this is a cold winter, but look at how nice this space is, and we are having some good feeding, and we are continuing to apply parasite preventions and things like that. That can be a really good opportunity to make sure that when they are reintroduced into that outdoor environment, that they may come close enough to then support their health long term. But I wouldn't want to keep them confined if they're just miserable in that situation.
Mm-hmm. And Dr. Callahan, here locally, if these are social kittens, I mean, it sounds like John and his wife don't need four new kittens themselves, but are there shelters that you would recommend or if they seem like they could be adoptable?
So Ohio Alley Cat Rescue is kind of our biggest local cat rescue that you know, this family could potentially, quote, foster these kittens because all of our shelters are quite full at this point. But having like a foster type of situation could be something that they could consider. I know there's some of the cat cafes could potentially, you know, coordinate potentially with them. But Ohio Alley Cat Rescue is the one that comes to the forefront of my mind as far as coordinating with this family about getting these kitty cats pictures out there for potential adoption. But there are some other local, I know staff, I think, also works with kitty cats as well.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, John, I hope that helps.
Well, unfortunately, they're extremely feral.
Okay. Mm. Not good candidates for adoption. Yeah.
No, but they will come up to my legs when I'm feeding them, but I cannot reach out and touch them.
Okay. Well, great. Nick, did you want to add to that?
Yeah, I was just going to add one thing that may be helpful as you're continuing to care for them in the immediate future is, to put it really simply, the more predictable that you can seem to any pets that you are helping to take care of, the more trust is going to be built. And so from their perspective, if you seem predictable, like when you are putting food down, they know that they can approach you and you're not going to just grab them or touch them unexpectedly or do anything that scares them, those are things that can detract from the relationship building. But if we are wanting to try to help normalize some of that human experience a little bit more, just being safe and predictable is going to be a really good space to be in for now.
Okay. Well, thanks, John. Good luck with those kittens.
I just want to add really, really quickly. There is a program that was put together by a rescue group called the Frady Cat Program. If you Google Frady Cat Program, an article from the International Association of Animal Behavior Consultant Foundation Journal will pop up that talks about kind of how they try and look at it, making these cats a little bit more handleable. So that would just be a resource to check out.
Okay. Great. Well, thanks so much, John. We appreciate it. Good luck with those kittens. I do want to talk a little bit more about pet medical emergencies. Let's start with this. Our friend Jennifer Merritt here at WVXU had another question. Once and for all, are poinsettias poisonous to pets? There, she sent me a link to new information from Purdue University that says poinsettias could make pets a little bit sick, but they're not the, you know, kind of death traps that they've been made out to be. Dr. Callahan, what do you think? I mean, I'm sure you see all kinds of pets come in who've had run-ins with the wrong kinds of plants. What are your thoughts?
Sure. I think that sentiment is pretty on point, where if the pet ate the whole poinsettia, maybe some vomiting, diarrhea, and you know, irritation, but they're largely not as toxic as I think what we, you know, put out before, what kind of the general public may perceive them. Not to say that you should leave it in a place for your cat or dog to be exposed to, but if a dying leaf falls on the ground and, you know, it's not like the end of the world, you know, sure, you shouldn't let your cat chew on it, but it's not like you have to rush them off to the veterinarian for that. So, you know, I worry more about the chocolate, the raisins, the grapes, and some of the other things that they're more likely to get exposed to.
Yeah.
And not necessarily plants or food items, but just medications are a really big thing for me that I worry about, where, you know, if your family's coming and traveling and they have their travel bag with all of their medications in, that could be devastating to an animal if they go investigating and eat your medications. And so that's what I worry about the most as an emergency doctor.
Well, and now that cannabis is legal mm-hmm. in Ohio, do you ever have pets come in who have gotten into somebody's...
All the time.
Yeah.
And honestly, I do worry about cannabis ingestions, but those are largely supportive care. We do have some ways to help them through that, but I'm talking about you traveling with your Aleve and your ibuprofen and your Tylenol and your ADHD medications, your birth control medications, your blood pressure medications. If a pet gets into that, it can be a very expensive stay in the hospital, as well as potentially very catastrophic. So, you know, I see a lot of pets that get into marijuana and all the various formulations of that, but it's usually just a bad trip and they're fine tomorrow. Mm-hmm. It's the other medications that I worry about.
Nick, did you want to add to that?
Yeah, absolutely. Just in support of that, having conversations with any family members that are coming to stay, we're going to keep medication in your bedroom. We are keeping medication in the bathroom. And hey, there is a gate at the top or the bottom of the stairs, and we need that kept shut so that our pet is staying away from your stuff. We're not having any of that commingling. And beyond the medications, which is definitely a really big concern, as well as the food scraps or food being taken, we also have decorations and potential things that we can get into. If we have a dog who or cat who consumes items, we can deal with emergency vet trips for that purpose as well, which we would want to avoid.
Right.
Yes.
We got an email from Donna. Donna asks, what should I look for when shopping for pet insurance? Dr. Johnson, what do you think about pet insurance? Is that something you recommend? Are there, if you do recommend it, are there things, parts of it people should look for when they're shopping for it?
I do recommend pet insurance. I don't have one specific brand that I recommend above others. I think it's very dependent on what your specific kind of needs and budget look like. But we know that there's research to show that pets that are insured get more comprehensive care. And I feel that they also tend to get more preventative measures done. And we head off big chronic illnesses a little faster than if we're uninsured. It really kind of lifts a barrier to care. And we can get to the bottom of things much more quickly. We're less likely to say, oh, well, let's try some supportive measures and then wait to do these diagnostics until we're totally sure that they're necessary. We'll catch things a little bit earlier and have better outcomes if we do have that insurance in place. So big fan of it. I've seen a lot of benefit from it, but also you need to do your own research because, again, I don't have a favorite.
Yeah. And is it affordable? I mean, how tough can it seems like is it something that everybody could afford or not? I don't know if you have thoughts on that, Dr. Callahan.
Yeah, sure. Insurance, yes. And do it before the injury happens because I can't tell you how many times that pets will come in needing many thousands of dollars worth of care and you know, insurance is not, you know, retroactive. You have to do it before the event happens. I don't have a favorite either. I would say check your employer. A lot of employers are offering pet health insurance now. And also, insurance within your family veterinarian doesn't carry over into the emergency room oftentimes. So a lot of the family veterinarians advertise insurance, and that's just for health, like their vaccines.
A wellness
and
that sort of
injury.
Yeah.
Nick. And I was just going to add something to the other side of things. If you haven't gotten insurance ahead of time and you're going to deal with big expenses, look into Care Credit. Make sure that you read the fine print. That is how I've been able to take care of all of my pets in these dire emergencies and not had to fret.
Okay. Yes, absolutely, Nick, for sure.
I've been talking with MedVet Cincinnati emergency veterinarian, Dr. Angie Callahan, veterinarian and certified cat behavior consultant, Dr. Denise Johnson, and certified professional dog trainer and owner of Paws Look Listen, Nick Hoff. Thank you all so much for your time today.
Thank you, Lucy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Technical director today is Stephen Baum. Rob Fetters composed our theme music. I'm Lucy May. Thank you so much for listening.